We're back live with more Anthony Herron on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
Here's Caleb Williams. He'll run it. Williams looking. Touchdown, Trojans.
He has been viewed as the consensus number one overall pick that's anticipated in this coming NFL draft. Caleb Williams began his college career at Oklahoma under Lincoln Riley, completed his college career in two seasons for the University of Southern California Trojans. And the Bears, as you may be aware, have the number one overall pick in this coming NFL draft. I'm Anthony Herron. This is Chicago Sports Radio 670. The Score. A couple hours to go here. Going to keep some Bears conversation rolling and we'll transition into a little bit more specific about Caleb Williams himself. So I'm still, I would say I'm early just in my evaluation of quarterbacks, players on the whole for this coming draft cycle. It'd be fun with USC joining the Big Ten next college football season if there were going to be, who knows, because Marvin Harrison Jr. just announced earlier today that he's going into the NFL draft. Monday is the deadline. I don't think, at least at this moment, I'll do a quick social media search and confirm, but I don't think I've missed anything here. I don't think Caleb Williams has actually officially declared for the draft yet, but that is every anticipation is that that's where things are heading here. But with that in mind, we'll hear from Boomer Esiason in a moment. He was on the afternoon show with Parkins and Spiegel giving his thoughts on Caleb Williams. I'll tell you where my thoughts sit at the moment. Like I mentioned, it'd be pretty exciting. I would love to be able to call some Caleb Williams games next season if he were going to stay for another season, but I highly doubt that he will, just like I highly doubted that Marvin Harrison Jr. was going to come back for another season at Ohio State. So pros and cons with all these prospects, of course. I'm not as concerned by the size of Caleb Williams. He is bigger than Kyler Murray, by comparison to some of the recent Lincoln Riley quarterbacks. He's bigger than Baker Mayfield. He's bigger than Kyler Murray, but he's not as big as Josh Allen, Cam Newton, Justin Herbert. But very few humans are. Very few quarterbacks are. Not as big as Justin Fields. But from a size perspective, I would love it if he were a couple of inches taller, but he's not. But he's bigger and in some ways more just pure physically gifted than some of the other recent Lincoln Riley QBs who ended up going number one overall in the NFL draft. He is an extremely gifted passer. He's got the football on a string when he's throwing it, especially when he's in rhythm, when he's hot, when he's confident, especially when he's got confidence in his playmakers. The football spins out of his hand. It speaks. It sings when it comes out of his hands. He can rapidly change the trajectory of the football. He can turn the nose over at a moment's notice. It's not just about the pure velocity he throws the ball with. I've been, telling folks this for years where, you hear people talk about arm talent, and in my opinion, the term gets misused a lot where, some folks just say arm talent, just thinking that a guy with a really big, strong arm is a really talented or gifted passer. And I've always found that there's a separation between arm strength and arm talent, where arm talent is really when you not only can be accurate from a pure platform and can throw the ball with velocity from a pure platform, but can you do a lot of the cool things where you can spin the ball from various arm angles, when you can drop the ball into a bucket, when there's an array of defenders surrounding a small space and turn the nose over in a really rapid manner to fit it into tight spots beyond just the velocity of it. And those are some of the things that Caleb Williams does on a regular basis and can throw with accuracy on the move. It doesn't even always look pretty coming out of his hand, but he can find a way to put the football where he wants it, when he wants it to get there. And one of the things I pointed out about Justin Fields throughout his time here with the Bears, Justin Fields is more of a shooting guard who can distribute than he is like a pure point guard with that intuitive sense of when to deliver the football, where and how to deliver the football, to get it there with anticipation, to almost kind of see into the future like some of these great quarterbacks can do. And there's a lot of that on Caleb Williams' film. Now, I would love it if there were more of his film. And it's not like it doesn't exist, but I would love it if there were more of his film of him just sort of purely playing in structure in the pocket, progressing through his reads and, you know, just being able to put the ball on the money where it's intended. And that's where, you know, a lot of the times where he does show the anticipation as a passer, from what I've seen at this stage in my evaluation of his college career, is even when he's extending the play and then it, as he's holding the ball for a while, but there's still ways you can throw with anticipation after you've held the ball for a while, because you, there's the opportunity to still throw a receiver open in a scramble drill situation. He does that exceptionally well. And even when he is throwing the ball in rhythm, the anticipation to be able to throw playmakers open in tight windows or in situations where they don't look open, but he can find a way to put the football in very catchable places, even beyond defenders who look like they're in position to make a play. He's just a very gifted passer of the football. He's not just one of these guys with a strong arm that throws it to places. And frankly, that's where Justin Herbert was in my development of him when he came out of college, called a number of his games at Oregon. And Justin Herbert was really more of a thrower, more of a power arm that in a quicker way than I anticipated was able to figure out how to pass with some more nuance. And he's continued to improve at that throughout his time in the NFL. Caleb Williams, he's got a lot of gifts as a passer, as an athlete. It does concern me the amount of turnovers there, the amount of times as a passer that he puts the football in harm's way, the amount of times as a runner that he holds it, that it gets stripped away, and he's just kind of careless with the football so frequently, so often. So that concerns me a lot in my evaluation of Caleb Williams. Ryan Poles talked a lot about evaluating the person, and it's hard for me to imagine that he doesn't have Caleb Williams in mind when he's talking about that. And it's not only about whether or not he thinks he's, you know, a law-abiding citizen, or is he highly intelligent or things like that, but some of the things I referenced in the previous hour about what comes with being the number one overall pick in the NFL draft, and especially if you're the number one overall pick in the NFL draft coming to the Chicago Bears, and what that means, what that would represent to this city, this quarterback-starved city of one of the preeminent franchises on planet Earth, and what that guy, this, you know, a celebrity quarterback who's been on national ad campaigns for multiple years at this point, and then he comes in out of the college ranks and comes into Chicago with Bears fans waiting for him to save the franchise. I'm certainly not here to tell you Caleb Williams isn't capable of that. He is more than talented enough to thrive within that. But the evaluation of the person, the evaluation not just of the mental aptitude, but the mental and emotional stamina and maturity that's necessary for Caleb Williams or anyone else as a number one pick QB to come in here to this city, this market, this franchise, and thrive, that's got to be a big part of the evaluation beyond just the eye-popping ability he has to make the football sing when he throws it, because that jumps off the film every game, even in games where he played poorly. You watch this young man spin the football and it is just, it's out of this world. There are a few humans who've ever walked the earth who can spin the football the way that Caleb Williams can spin the football. So that part is uber impressive. A lot of the other stuff, the things that are most difficult to evaluate are what may end up giving some pause, and I would understand the pause. In the end, you're going to make the most informed decision that you can, and it's necessary to be able to do that. And frankly, some of those things, as great an athlete as Justin Fields is, he's not nearly as gifted of a pure passer as Caleb Williams is. But then a lot of those intangibles that I'm describing, the mental and emotional stamina, the toughness, the grit and determination, those things have been off the charts in his time here. The things that Trent Dilfer with the Afternoon Show would talk about as the stuff bucket for Justin Fields, those have been off the charts. But then the production as a passer has been so inconsistent that the door is more than ajar. And as I sit here, I'd say more likely the Bears, because they have the number one overall pick, would likely be moving on from Justin Fields with the prospects, and especially a prospect the caliber of Caleb Williams, there available and waiting for them with the number one pick. But Boomer Esiason was on the afternoon show today. He was on with Danny and Matt, and they, of course, asked him specifically about Caleb Williams. And Boomer's been evaluating the Bears. He's been evaluating Justin Fields, and he has fielded, whether it's been in New York or here in Chicago, questions about Caleb Williams. And so the guys very simply asked Boomer, would he pick Caleb Williams first overall in this coming NFL draft?
Number one pick, I'm taking Caleb Williams. He's a transformative player, generational player. The things I see him doing on the field, very few players ever have I seen do what he does. And he's just a special player. Now, I don't know the man personally. I don't know what kind of guy he's like. I know he likes to paint his fingernails and put different things on his hands and jumps into the stands and hugs his mom and all that other stuff. I don't know that part of him. But what I see on the football field is a can't-miss football player that is going to take some franchise into the next decade, much like I would say Joe Burrow has, like Patrick Mahomes has. I'm putting him in that level of player. And, of course, Josh Allen has for the Buffalo Bills. So, to me, it's really a no-brainer. It's a quarterback league, and I know that Justin Fields has gotten better over the years and maybe a little bit cheaper in the long run if they want to sign him to an extension. But if I'm Ryan Poles, I'm sorry. I'm in the Caleb Williams camp and have been for 2 years, by the way. This is not anything that, you know, I just figured out over the last 3 weeks or something. I've been talking about Caleb since he went to USC, pretty much watched every single one of his games. It's too bad that his coach didn't believe in defense at USC, Lincoln Riley. But at the end of the day, I'm telling you, he is a very, very special player. And I would be very surprised if the Chicago Bears passed up on him.
The unfortunate thing, and it's great stuff from Boomer right there, and you certainly – you know, value the opinion of someone who's done it at a high level as a player, as a quarterback in the NFL, and also who's broken this thing down as an analyst, one of the top analysts in the business for decades now. I mean, you know, draft day, the movie, the Kevin Costner movie, you can have a lot of opinions on the movie itself, but it does, you know, enter my mind a bit here, just thinking about it. Tyler, what was the, who's the Wisconsin quarterback in the movie that Kevin Costner was trying to decide if he was going to take him or the pass rusher from Ohio State? It was Bo something, right? It was,
yeah, let me look that up for you. I'm trying to remember.
I think it was like Bo Callahan, I want to say, something like that. And so, you know, Kevin Costner's trying to think about that because this is your can't-miss guy, and they're trying to figure out whether or not he should take Bo Callahan and have Bo lead the offense into the future, or am I going to take the pass rusher instead and just move on? And I have this veteran QB that the locker room has galvanized around, and maybe we just skip Bo Callahan, skip the can't-miss guy. He falls down the draft boards. What's wrong with him, Kevin? You got to let us know, man. And he's trading picks here and there and all this other kind of stuff. You know, Draft Day is a cheesy movie. Well, at the same time, I understand the notes that they were trying to strike, and they got to use real team names and all this other stuff. You know, I'm not going to go down a Draft Day rabbit hole here. But there are some similarities to the situation that the Bears are in here, because you have this historic franchise who is QB starved, who have a veteran quarterback on the team. And, you know, veteran just feels 3 years in. That's a vet. He is vested at this point in the National Football League, with a locker room that has very publicly and boisterously been in support of him, has galvanized around him. But then you also have this guy who is the definitive number one QB prospect in this draft cycle. And, you know, some folks would utter that he is the best QB's prospect that we've seen in years, or one of the best ever, that sort of thing. I don't know that I necessarily take it that far, because of I think he is one of the most gifted passers we've seen, one of the most talented pure passers we've seen. But I do think it goes beyond that to some extent. And part of that is probably just my traditional sense, my traditional brain of wanting to see more of him being willing and able to operate in structure and protecting the football at a higher level with all the fumbles we've seen and that sort of thing. But he is an extremely gifted passer. And, you know, I do think that, you know, because the Bears have the top pick, then it may, like Boomer's saying there, it may end up being a fairly easy decision for them. I don't know, because Caleb Williams plays the college game like Patrick Mahomes operates in the NFL, like Patrick Mahomes operated in college to some extent. At this point, Patrick Mahomes is the sole quarterback who has been able to so consistently thrive outside of structure at the NFL level. Now, you can make a case that Lamar Jackson has been that also. I would say that Patrick Mahomes is certainly very different from Lamar Jackson, where I guess I can specify my Mahomes point even more. Patrick Mahomes has thrived as a passer outside of structure in a way that no football player, no quarterback ever has in the NFL. I think in a similar way to Steph Curry in the NBA, where the idea of a good shot, of a quality three-pointer, is so different now in the NBA, specifically because of Steph Curry. He's changed the game in such a way that now you do see other players willing to attempt deeper threes, willing to attempt contested threes and step back threes, because Steph Curry has been so prolific at that throughout his career. And then at a certain point, you got this kind of like Kobe came in as a Jordan facsimile during his playing career towards the end of Mike's playing days. And Kobe was kind of the closest facsimile we had seen to Jordan. And Kobe was closer to Jordan than this next parallel I would give you. But I think Trae Young is kind of a facsimile of Steph Curry. And Trae Young is an exceptional player, but he ain't Steph Curry. And so I think that there's the possibility that that's what Caleb Williams ends up becoming. And that wouldn't be disappointing. If Caleb Williams comes in and becomes kind of the Trae Young to the NBA, Steph Curry, and Caleb Williams becomes the Trae Young to Patrick Mahomes, as, you know, as he is to Steph Curry, then, you know, there wouldn't be anything wrong with that. That certainly feels like it's worthy of the top pick in the NFL draft. But that's my curiosity, whether or not, as much as Caleb Williams plays outside of structure as a passer, can he get away with that? Can he thrive with that in the NFL, or can he be developed? Can his game morph enough? Keep the playmaking ability in there, but can his game morph enough where NFL competition doesn't take advantage of all these, what I would term as sort of careless decisions that he would make with the football beyond structure as a passer, and kind of combine those two things? That's my biggest concern, without really knowing him as a person, while at the same time recognizing a lot of the rumors that are out there that are beyond his control. And that's where, to me, the Bears and other teams will have all the due diligence in the world that they need to do. But some of what other people have gotten bothered by is the rumors about him wanting a piece of the franchise, like to be a part owner of an NFL team, which sounds ridiculous, but to my knowledge, we've never heard Caleb Williams utter that publicly himself. Other folks in the social media world have attributed some of this to him. I've never heard Caleb Williams utter anything like that. The idea that after USC's first loss of the season, maybe he'll just sit out the rest of the year. Now, I heard talking heads on television and radio proclaiming that that may be a good idea for him. I never heard Caleb Williams himself consider that. But again, that's one of these things that sort of gets tagged with the perception of Caleb Williams as a player, as a competitor, as a person. So that's where the Bears will have to sift through fact and fiction in evaluating not just Caleb Williams, the prospect, not just the tangible of Caleb Williams, but also the person, the competitor, the leader, the learner. How mature is he? All those other things that factor into someone being worthy of the top pick in the NFL draft. Well, certainly an individual who has evaluated the NFL draft as closely, as deeply, for as long as anyone in the industry is Hub Arkish. Very curious for his thoughts on what he studied and heard so far about Caleb Williams, about where things sit now with the Chicago Bears after their press conference yesterday. And oh, by the way, about his Michigan Wolverines, about Jim Harbaugh as a national champion, and now another offseason where he will likely be a sought-after commodity to coach in the National Football League. My guy Hub Arkish, he will join me next to break all those things down on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
He's got it. Michigan barrels in. And the maize and blue on the brink of ending a championship drought.
Our thanks to ESPN for that audio. I was certainly watching closely, had some pregame duties throughout the day earlier in the day, and then I was on all day on Tuesday morning and into the afternoon breaking things down for the Big Ten Network. And I got to admit, on occasion, my guy crossed my mind. Hub Arkish, his Michigan Wolverines were able to win the college football playoff national championship. And all guests, including Hub Arkish, join us on the Score Hotline presented by Circus Sports Illinois. You can find him on Twitter at Hub_Arkish, the executive editor of Pro Football Weekly. Hub, how you doing this evening, man?
I'm good, Anthony. How you doing, bud?
I am outstanding. So there's plenty of Bears and NFL stuff to get into, but I would like to allow you the moment to kind of bask in the glow. First national championship for Michigan football since 1997 when they shared it with Nebraska. First outright national title since 1948. Go Blue got it done on Monday night. How good did that feel?
Well, it was a lot of fun. You know, I'm an alum. It's not just that I'm nuts about certain things about Michigan. Those 4 years of my life were some of the best years of my life. It's an incredible place. It's a great school. And it was a great football team. It was pretty obvious to me, you know, beyond the bias, I'm an alum, that they were the best team in the country. You know, just watching them, and particularly that defense, you know, and that's how they won on Monday night. A lot of credit to Washington, who had a great season. It was obviously a very good football team. But this was Michigan's year. They had a 3-year plan for this. They've talked a lot about it. And this year, in spite of some controversy, they executed obviously about as well as you can.
And, Hub, I feel like Michigan this season, and frankly, Georgia of the last couple of seasons as well, teams that are more so led by their defense, certainly playmakers available on offense, but led by their defense and the line of scrimmage, it feels a little more traditional to me. And there was such a period of time there where both college football and the National Football League, there was a lot of discussion that like defense had been outlawed and the sport is still very quarterback centric, but you know, high flying offenses aren't necessarily the way of the day as much as it seemed like it was a few seasons ago. Do you feel like this more traditional version of football with defense and offensive line play that Michigan won a national title with this year, is this kind of where the sport is now going more retro, or is this just a moment in time and it's going to go back to quarterbacks throwing for a million yards?
Well, it's always going to be about the quarterback first, you know, and it has been for a number of years. That's not something new. But at the end of the day, Anthony, I've always believed that football is a game of blocking and tackling, you know, and you do that on your lines, you know, and that's where you have to be really good to have a really good football team. And when you look at how Michigan did it, they were rotating 10 different defensive linemen on and off the field all season long. That wasn't something they just, you know, did for Alabama or for Washington. And then offensively, you know, for last year and the year before, they were voted the best offensive line in college football. And, you know, you see what it's led to. Now, that's not to say that that's all they've had. I think that J.J. McCarthy is badly underrated right now. I can't believe these lists where I see him as the sixth or seventh best quarterback in this draft. He's much better than that. He's not Caleb Williams, but, you know, the way he plays the game and the way he's learned it from the all-time greatest, Tom Brady, you're probably aware of this, but apparently him and Brady have been talking weekly for almost 2 years now. And, you know, he's had great training, and he was the key guy. As much as the defensive line and offensive line were, you know, what drove that team on game day for 60 minutes, at the end of the day, it was, you know, J.J. McCarthy who made the plays every time he had, what's the record, 26-1, 27-1, something like that. You know, any quarterback who can win that many football games, obviously, I think, is a pretty good football player.
In the in the modern era, he's right now, I think, a 27-1 career record, the winningest modern era quarterback of all time right now for that stretch of time here with his career starts up to this point. And so he'll be certainly a curiosity for whether or not he decides to enter this coming NFL draft cycle. Of course, his head coach, Jim Harbaugh, will be amongst that conversation as well. I want to talk Harbaugh in a moment here, but to depart from kind of the Michigan specific conversation, it does come to mind as well where we have seen now Bill Belichick and Nick Saban and Pete Carroll all now no longer in their situations they had been in, winning at a high level for a number of years, for over a decade in all cases. What was your reaction over that 48-hour stretch of time where all those three Hall of Famers are now no longer coaching with the teams they've been most synonymous with?
Well, Saban was the only one that caught me off guard because nobody was talking about that. And he is 72 years old. It's certainly time, I guess, to think about slowing down a little bit. But I just didn't see that one coming. You know, the others, we've been hearing a lot about, you know, particularly the last few weeks, and so they weren't shocking. But, you know, in its totality, to have those three coaches all of a sudden all gone at once, I just find that very sad because I think Bill Belichick is the best coach of all time. And, you know, I think that all three of these guys are on the list of people you talk about. And for the game to say goodbye to that much all at once, you know, I find it a little sad, you know, although I don't think they're done. I think that Belichick will be coaching somewhere this year, you know, and I'm not at all sure what's happening in Seattle either. But at least for right now, it just, you know, remembering how great all three have been, hoping that you know, the two NFL coaches can get jobs and maybe even, you know, still be competitive. I think the problem, you know, really in New England, it isn't just about Belichick. I think he was not a very good general manager. I think he's still a great football coach. And I think there's enough teams out there that know that. And he's going to coach somewhere this year, and I can't wait to see where it is.
And I'm glad you mentioned that because it did seem like Belichick, the GM, was going to get Belichick, the coach, fired at a certain point. And perhaps that's really how things kind of came apart there in New England. So what level of coaching prospect is Bill Belichick at this point then? Does the resume of historic success and winning, will that provide him enough ammunition if he wants to go somewhere and have personnel control?
Well, I think he probably knows with what's happened the last three or four years, and if he wants to continue, that his best choice would be to go somewhere with a good GM who could give him a good football team. I don't think he's going to be looking for both jobs. I can't imagine that. I think he just wants to continue to coach. And, you know, I think it's got to be a team that thinks they're close because you don't want to start a new rebuild with a 72-year-old coach. So you look at the Chargers. Everybody talks about the Chargers first because of Justin Herbert and because of all the talent, you know. And it certainly would be a spot that I think he would, you know, be interested in landing. I look at Atlanta. I don't know that they're ready to contend right away, but they're not on a rebuild. You know, they've definitely got some of the pieces there. You know, and I think Antonio Pierce should keep the Raiders job, but I know that owner is not the brightest football guy in the world, and I'm not sure he'll be smart enough to understand that. And, you know, looking at that roster, that could be a place where one of these veteran coaches goes. But I think those three might be the most likely choices because these other teams are going to be hiring new coaches. They're not going to be contending for anything for another at least two, maybe 3 years.
My guy, Hub Arcus, here with me on Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Joining me on The Score Hotline, presented by Circus Sports Illinois, and you can find Hub on Twitter at Hub_Arcus. So to kind of dovetail back into the Michigan conversation, and then where do you see Jim Harbaugh, especially now after adding a college football playoff national championship to his resume? And, of course, there was plenty of success in San Francisco at the NFL level. He's won everywhere he's been. So where do you see him in the discussion of current potential NFL head coaching candidates?
Oh, I think that, you know, all six or seven of these teams at least want to check and find out. I know a lot of people in Chicago were really upset. You know, I'm sure we'll talk a little bit about this. I think that Matt Eberflus has been treated about as unfairly as any coach I've ever seen for the job he did this year. And people talking about firing him, I thought was ridiculous. But that, you know, that Ryan Poles said yesterday that he never even called Jim or considered it. That has disappointed some people, and I understand that because obviously there's a big Jim Harbaugh connection to the Bears. But, you know, as far as what Jim's going to do, we've stayed good friends over the years, but I haven't talked to him in, I don't know, it's been probably 7-8 weeks now, and I don't know what he's going to do, but I know a lot of other people who are close to him, we're all talking. Nobody knows. Everybody who is the closest to I trust the most tells me they think he's 50-50 right now. You know, and it just depends on which jobs are offered and what the rosters look like. And he definitely has not written off coming back to Michigan. And, you know, what we heard, they've offered him a $125 million contract. So, you know, it wouldn't be a bad place to stay. And I don't think he's really made up his mind yet. I've always sensed, because we do still stay in touch pretty regularly, that he's enjoyed interviewing more than taking jobs. And, you know, I think he's going to go through the process. And, he may be looking for a little more from Michigan. I don't think he liked being told that he could have that $125 million contract, but he had to agree not to consider an NFL job for just 1 year, as I understood it, which really I find strange. If I was Michigan and I was going to do that, I would say for at least 3 years or something, you know, give me some staying time. So there's enough open questions right now that it seems to me, and to most of the experts, I think, a little more likely that he goes to the NFL and stays at Michigan. But he clearly has not made any decisions yet.
And I don't know how closely you've tracked the NCAA investigation aspect of this, where, of course, this last regular season, he was suspended for half of it. You know, you had the first three games of the year from a recruiting investigation. Michigan self-imposed those three games. Then the final three games of the regular season, the Big Ten steps in and sits Harbaugh down for those final three games based off the Connor Stallion signal-stealing, sign-stealing allegations and investigation that went on there. And there has been some conversation about the potential for any additional NCAA sanctions may be following him to the National Football League. I'm not sure there's much precedent for that. Is that something that you would anticipate may be any sort of stumbling block or sticking point as Harbaugh pursues NFL opportunities?
Well, you know, I think you got to tell the whole story, and I think we've got to be honest and clear about it. There's no way that Jim didn't know that they were getting some signs, you know, I mean, because who are they giving them to if they got them? But at the same time, the NCAA has acknowledged they have no evidence against him yet for being involved in it in any way. And the Big Ten has said that they don't have evidence either. They just decided, I guess, to make people happy that they would suspend him. So it's been very strange. But again, there's no way Jim didn't have some idea of what was going on. I don't know how much he knew about the I don't want to say illegality. There's nothing illegal about it, but the rules and how much he understood them. But at the end of the day, it clearly is going to be an ongoing story. And I don't think anybody can blame him for who wants to deal with that for another 6 months or a year or 2 years, not knowing what else could be coming. They can't, then the NFL's not going to do anything to him, no matter what they find out. If he goes to the NFL, he's starting fresh and clean there. And I think that's why most people assume he will go to the NFL, and why it probably does make the most sense. But what I think is interesting is when the NCAA finally gets into this investigation, finds out what they find, even if Jim is gone, are they going to punish Michigan? You know, I think you almost have to, really, if you find that there was wrongdoing, or if it's possible that this kid, or not kid, the young man, you know, who was running the sign stealing was doing most of it on his own, and that the school wasn't aware of how bad it was. We don't know that yet. The NCAA hasn't even started their investigation yet. They've started, but they haven't got any evidence yet. So until we learn more about what really was going on, who knew what and who did what, I don't think we know how it's going to affect Michigan. But I do think it's the reason, the main reason, that Harbaugh decides to go to the NFL.
And we just had some breaking news. My guy Tyler Butterball just passed over to me. Breaking news on the scores brought to you by BetQL. Smarter bets start with BetQL. Download the BetQL app or visit BetQL.com today. And several reporters out there, including Jeremy Fowler of ESPN, saying that the Bears plan to interview 49ers passing game coordinator Clint Kubiak, that per multiple sources from Jeremy Fowler. And so he'd be an additional interview that has taken place from the Chicago Bears here. Do you think, well, how much urgency do you believe the Bears will and or should operate with as they're pursuing? Now they've announced Matt Eberflus is back as a coach. They had the presser yesterday. Now they have to go through this collective process between Poles and Eberflus to decide who the OC will be. What type of a timeline do you anticipate that moving with?
I think it has to move very quickly, and I think it will move very quickly because they have a big advantage right now. The other, six or seven teams that are looking for new head coaches – aren't hiring staffs yet. And everybody's going to want somebody from the 49ers, we know that, for an offensive coach. And now we know that apparently that's what they're thinking, or that's what we're hearing. And I think that they will, you know, hopefully do their homework and take the time that they need. But it is definitely in their advantage to try and pick their guy and find the right guy before these other teams start hiring head coaches, because they're all going to be looking for new offensive coordinators too.
One thing that Ryan Poles spoke about pretty frequently, repeatedly yesterday, talking about evaluating the person with the top pick, and when talking about a quarterback perhaps at the top of the draft there. In the years that you've been covering it, I mean, whether it's a number one overall pick or top 10 pick or whomever, it does seem to me that maturity ends up being a big aspect of success at the NFL level. The requisite talent has to be there, but some of those intangibles factor in quite a bit also. Do you feel like the Bears, with that top pick, you know, I do think it's very likely they move on from Justin Fields and go with a QB there, but there's an evaluation to complete between now and then. What's your sense for where and how that plays out and how important it is in evaluating someone with the talents of Caleb Williams?
Well, you know, Anthony, I think maturity and smarts and you know, understanding the system are the most important thing in a quarterback, because, you know, everybody who's evaluating these guys, Williams, Bay, whoever it is, you know, they can see the tape, you know, they can watch him, they know what his physical talent is, but that's not the difference between the great quarterbacks in the NFL, because they all have outstanding physical talent. We also know that most of these first-round quarterbacks never become the franchise quarterback or even the regular winning quarterback that you want them to be. And the great separator is the one who understands the game the best, who reads the field the best, who knows what he's seeing and looking for and makes decisions quickly enough. And unfortunately, that's the only serious problem with Justin Fields, is that he doesn't do it well. And I don't know if that can be taught. So I think at this point, I don't think that regardless of what they do, whether they draft a quarterback or not, well, if they don't draft him, they're obviously keeping Justin. But even if they do draft one, I don't think they have to trade Justin Fields. There's nothing wrong. I've heard all these warnings about having a new quarterback and Fields in a locker room together. I'm not worried about that at all, because Justin Fields is one of the more impressive young men I've met as far as his, you know, his mind, the way it works and how he thinks and how he acts and how he carries himself. And I'm sure they would be careful with whoever else they would draft if they're going to draft another one. And the other thing here, Anthony, that I find interesting, there is no question about, you know, Williams' talent, the physical talent. But there are some questions about him as a young man. Now, I don't know if they're fair. I don't have anything negative to say about him. But I just don't think, knowing what happens with these highly drafted quarterbacks, that he is the only choice. I don't believe that he is that much better than the next top three or four. And so that gives the Bears, you know, two options. They can say, yeah, it's Williams. We think he's the next, you know, Patrick Mahomes or, you know, whoever you want to be, Tom Brady. Or they can say that, no, one of these other top kids has got a better chance of being a better quarterback. And so the Bears can take Williams at number one. They're not going to get him if they don't. Or they can trade that pick, get a boatload of talent, and still take another quarterback in the first round. And that's what I think they should do, because I think that's the best way to continue this rebuild that they're working on. And I do think there's a good chance that one of these other quarterbacks, one in particular, is eventually going to be the best quarterback in this draft.
It would certainly make for a deep QB room if you keep Fields, draft a first rounder. You got Tyson Bagent, who you saw do some nice thing last season. Also, having a deep QB room, that is not a position the Bears have often found themselves in. So it's an option that Ryan Poles did not take off the table yesterday. Really appreciate it, Hub. Went a little bit heavy with you, but you've always got great stuff to say. And I'm glad you spent that time with me this evening, man. Have a great rest of your night.
Always great to talk to you, Anthony. Take care.
That is the great Hub Argus, my guest here on Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Do want to get into some additional thoughts about these quarterbacks we're discussing here towards the top of the draft. Some of the prospects that are viewed as being a part of that top of the draft, high in the first round conversation beyond Caleb Williams, and more sound from Ryan Poles, from Matt Eberflus to come as I continue with you this Thursday evening edition. I'm Anthony Herron. This is Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
We're back live with more Anthony Herron on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
I got a lot of confidence in our ability to see talent on the field. The human being, we got to figure out just especially be a quarterback in this city, you got to have it right. You got to have toughness to you. You got to have mental toughness. You got to be able to block things out. So really, I got to find out about the human beings.
It's Ryan Poles. That's where I'm not convinced it's a no-brainer that they move on from Justin Fields. I did go into the final game, that game against Green Bay, and I did feel like there was an opportunity for Justin Fields. And not that they would base everything off that one game, but I did feel like there was a body of work as a playmaker and a body of work as a worker and as a leader, as a galvanizer, that all those things are just difficult to ignore when you're around that. I did think that if Justin Fields were able to go into that Green Bay, perform well at Lambeau Field, and perhaps walk out of there with a win. But just his individual performance, I did feel like there was an opportunity there for Justin Fields to solidify the idea of at least another season, what may end up still being, could have still ended up being a lame duck year. But I did think that showing some consistency, putting back-to-back big-time games together, just like he, you know, not only played extremely well against Denver and against Washington in back-to-back weeks earlier in the season, played really well against the Detroit Lions and against the Atlanta Falcons. We've certainly seen plenty of quality games as a passer. Those aren't games I'm pointing out Justin Fields as a runner. That's as a passer where he threw the ball really well with consistency and accuracy and all those things and showed plenty of development as a quarterback. And I thought if he could put back-to-back high-level games together, just like he closed out his, you know, the final Soldier Field home game against Atlanta with a big-time performance, and if he could put that together again in Green Bay, and especially if they were able to do it in a win, although I thought that would have solidified at least another year, even with the number one overall pick, that all these other things that the Bears had witnessed from Justin Fields, just like Hub Arcus was talking about a moment ago, that could have solidified at least another season. Not a nine-figure investment, but when you have something that's there in-house, it's hard to ignore. It's hard to pass up on, as opposed to potentially going out and taking a lottery pick in the NFL draft. So I'm not certain either way. I think it's more likely than not that the Bears use the number one pick and move on from Justin Fields, but it's rare that you see someone who has proven themselves as a quality quarterback, as a playmaking quarterback in the NFL. I'm not saying Justin Fields has shown himself as a top 10 quarterback in football, but he's made a lot of plays over the last couple of seasons here with the Bears, both with his legs and with his arms, and then you add in all the other intangible aspects of what he brings to the locker room, the way his teammates have now reacted to him. It's not easy just to step away from that. Just like the human, the interpersonal aspect of Matt Eberflus's relationship with Ryan Poles, that's a part of the reason Matt Eberflus, I believe, continues on as Bears head coach. Difference being here, Ryan Poles hired Matt Eberflus. Ryan Poles did not draft Justin Fields. So all these things are the variety of levels that go into that decision, and there are a number of quarterbacks that will be viewed at the top of the draft here. I discussed my thoughts on Caleb Williams. As I know, like every time I'm on, I see the text line light up with folks asking me about the evaluations of Caleb Williams and a bunch of other quarterbacks. So I do want to give you some of that as well at the top of this next hour and get into some more sound from Ryan Poles as well, as far as just what we heard from them yesterday, my interpretation of some of the things that we heard. But being a grown-up is such a big deal when you get drafted high, especially when you go high in the first round as a quarterback, and the scrutiny that will come with that. That's a question Justin Fields has answered. It's a question that would now become an open question drafting one of these quarterbacks in. But I'll get into some of that, my thoughts on some of these other NFL draft eligible QBs, and how that relates to the decision the Chicago Bears will make. I'm Anthony Heron. Final hour coming up with this Thursday edition of my show on Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
We're back live with more Anthony Heron on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
I got a lot of confidence in our ability to see talent on the field. The human being, we got to figure out. Just especially be a quarterback in this city, you got to have it right. You got to have toughness to you. You got to have mental toughness. You got to be able to block things out. So really, I got to find out about the human beings.
It's Ryan Poles. That's where I'm not convinced it's a no-brainer that they move on from Justin Fields. I did go into the final game, that game against Green Bay, and I did feel like there was an opportunity for Justin Fields. And not that they would base everything off that one game, but I did feel like there was a body of work as a playmaker and a body of work as a worker and as a leader, as a galvanizer, that all those things are just difficult to ignore when you're around that. I did think that if Justin Fields were able to go into that Green Bay, perform well at Lambeau Field, and perhaps walk out of there with a win. But just his individual performance, I did feel like there was an opportunity there for Justin Fields to solidify the idea of at least another season, what may end up still being, could have still ended up being a lame duck year. But I did think that showing some consistency, putting back-to-back big-time games together, just like he, you know, not only played extremely well against Denver and against Washington in back-to-back weeks earlier in the season, played really well against the Detroit Lions and against the Atlanta Falcons. We've certainly seen plenty of quality games as a passer. Those aren't games I'm pointing out Justin Fields as a runner. That's as a passer where he threw the ball really well with consistency and accuracy and all those things and showed plenty of development as a quarterback. And I thought if he could put back-to-back high-level games together, just like he closed out his, you know, the final Soldier Field home game against Atlanta with a big-time performance, and if he could put that together again in Green Bay, and especially if they were able to do it in a win, although I thought that would have solidified at least another year, even with the number one overall pick, that all these other things that the Bears had witnessed from Justin Fields, just like Hub Arkins was talking about a moment ago, that could have solidified at least another season. Not a nine-figure investment, but when you have something that's there in-house, it's hard to ignore, it's hard to pass up on, as opposed to potentially going out and taking a lottery pick in the NFL draft. So I'm not certain either way. I think it's more likely than not that the Bears use the number one pick and move on from Justin Fields, but it's rare that you see someone who has proven themselves as a quality quarterback, as a playmaking quarterback in the NFL. I'm not saying Justin Fields has shown himself as a top 10 quarterback in football, but he's made a lot of plays over the last couple of seasons here with the Bears, both with his legs and with his arms. And then you add in all the other intangible aspects of what he brings to the locker room, the way his teammates have now reacted to him. It's not easy just to step away from that. Just like the human, the interpersonal aspect of Matt Eberflus's relationship with Ryan Poles. That's a part of the reason Matt Eberflus, I believe, continues on as Bears head coach. Difference being here, Ryan Poles hired Matt Eberflus. Ryan Poles did not draft Justin Fields. So all these things are the variety of levels that go into that decision. And there are a number of quarterbacks that will be viewed at the top of the draft here. I discussed my thoughts on Caleb Williams. As I know, like every time I'm on, I see the text line light up with folks asking me about the evaluations of Caleb Williams and a bunch of other quarterbacks. So I do want to give you some of that as well at the top of this next hour and get into some more sound from Ryan Poles as well, as far as just what we heard from them yesterday, my interpretation of some of the things that we heard. But being a grown-up is such a big deal when you get drafted high, especially when you go high in the first round as a quarterback, and the scrutiny that will come with that. That's a question Justin Fields has answered. It's a question that would now become an open question drafting one of these quarterbacks in. But I'll get into some of that, my thoughts on some of these other NFL draft eligible QBs and how that relates to the decision the Chicago Bears will make. I'm Anthony Heron. Final hour coming up with this Thursday edition of my show on Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.